Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Welcome to Centerpoint. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Anbar. In this show, we will discuss ways that we can journey to our own centers. This can help us access our inner resources to improve our physical abilities and health, our mental strength, our emotional well-being, and our spirituality. And today, I'd like to introduce a very special guest, Kaveh. Welcome.
Hello. Hello. How's it going?
Going well. Thank you so much for joining us. I wanted to tell the audience a little bit about you. You are a patient and student of mine. We've known each other, I think, for 4 years already.
And nearing on five, yeah.
Almost five. So you're currently in 11th grade, and you're doing an internship with me. Actually, Kaveh's actually helping out around the office. He's joined me in seeing some of the patients and has done some tedious office work, which we've appreciated. And he's also written a bunch of blogs that we are using to help explain what hypnosis is all about. Kaveh loves music. He likes going out with his friends. And he loves helping people wherever he can. So, again, welcome.
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
So I thought we would talk, the first part of the show, you've dealt with some anxiety and depression in your life. And while we don't have to go into specific details about you, I know you have a lot of insights regarding this. And I'm very curious if you can explain from your point of view how you can either start with anxiety and depression, how that started in your life, and sort of how it evolved over the time, over the last few years.
Yeah, all right. So as I'm assuming it's for most people, it wasn't one event that really triggered it. It was a culmination of a lot of negative events that happened in my life, and eventually I cracked. And it was a slow decline at first. At first I was just kind of feeling less motivated to do things, and then I started noticing, you know, more symptoms of depression. And so that was kind of how it started. And yeah, it really affected my life for a while. It was difficult to get anything done and maintain hobbies that I used to really love doing, and seeing people that I used to really love seeing. And so that was a very difficult time. It still is a difficult time, but I'm managing a lot better. Sorry, what was your other question?
So, well, we'll talk about anxiety a little bit later, but in terms of depression, I'm curious, do you think that it occurred because of negative events in your life, or do you think it was also a combination of how you reacted to those events? Or if we talk in more general terms, do you think that depression occurs because, in other words, it's intrinsic to how people think or how their biochemistry is, or do you think it's triggered by external events? How do you think?
I think as most things, you know, nurture versus nature, it's somewhere in between. Of course, some people are more predisposed to depression and anxiety, but I also think that, yes, negative reinforcement in their life a lot, if they go through a lot of stuff like traumatic events or you know, just constant negative feedback, it can definitely make it a lot more likely to develop depression.
So it's interesting because most people who develop depression don't know anything about it before they develop it and haven't had therapy before it develop it. But given our work together and your work and what you've learned about depression, if somebody thinks they're slipping into depression, are there things you think they can do to prevent themselves going that road?
Well, yes. First and foremost, and the mistake that I made is not seeking help, and it's really, really hard to. But, you know, it's much better being uncomfortable for that first bit than, you know, falling all the way down into that pit, because it's really hard to get out of. So I'd say my first and biggest piece of advice is really asking for help, telling a guardian, getting in touch with your doctor, and, you know, starting to see someone and, you know, dig to the root of it, right? I'd also say learning some cognitive behavioral therapy skills would definitely help, just because it helps really cope with some of the things that could cause a spiral down into depression. So those are probably the two biggest tips that I would give.
So when you start feeling, now how long, I guess we should clarify, depression is not just feeling sad, right? So
no.
Why should somebody think they might have depression from your experience?
It's really hard to tell. It's really hard to self-diagnose it because a lot of people will feel, you know, like they're being an imposter, like they're actually fine. At least that's how I was. So it took me a really long time to even accept that I was expressing depressive symptoms. But some ways to identify is, you know, you start, like, hardly sleeping at all. You really give up on things that you enjoy. You start avoiding people as a whole. And for me, I noticed that I was a lot more irritable and also a lot less emotional at the same time. I became very numb to the world and just easily, easily irritated.
So you're describing well the symptoms of depression. I think what you say is very true. And so if somebody notices that in themselves, you think they should seek help, and I agree, but, you know, I'm of the mind that every teenager, since I work with young kids, every teenager should benefit from a counselor, which is, of course, impractical,
yeah.
And even every teenager starts feeling depressed, going to a counselor is tough, and in fact, let's talk about, you were hesitating to seek help, and I know that, I don't know how your parents acted when you asked for help, but a lot of parents will tell their team, well, it's not that big of a deal. You don't need help. What hurdles did you have when you didn't seek help initially?
So I felt very isolated, and I knew it was because I was isolating myself, but it really felt like I was alone in the world and that nobody really cared. And so that made it even harder to eventually ask for help. And then when I did, my parents were relatively dismissive until the darker thoughts started presenting themselves, and then I told them, and then they were like, okay, we'll try to get you in to see a therapist. But I didn't really start therapy until well after I started on antidepressants. And so it really took me a long time to get counseling. They tried to, you know, medicate me before any of that, and it didn't work on its own. It doesn't work on its own. So it's only treating a symptom, not actually getting to the root of it.
So, Kavi, can you explain why you didn't really want to go to counseling? What was holding you back?
There was a couple of reasons. I'd say the biggest one is I didn't want to admit anything was wrong with me, just because I was told, you know, my entire life, like, you got to be perfect, you got to be smart, you got to be strong for everyone in your life, and so I didn't want to I guess let myself down, and by proxy let other people down by admitting that I was struggling with depression. And then another reason was I just didn't want to, you know, be a faker. There's a lot of people on social media who, you know, talk about, you know, I'm so depressed. But a lot of these people, you know, you can really see the difference between a truly depressed person and as someone who's doing it for that instant sympathy. And I didn't want to be one of those people who was just seen as someone who was just farming sympathy from people around me, because, you know, that's not who I am.
It's interesting. I think a lot of kids, whatever ails them, they think they can, they should do it on their own. And this, in fact, you don't have to have something wrong with you. I see athletes and I say, hey, I can help you improve your athletic performance using mind-body regulation. And they say, no, I could do it on my own. Because there's this myth out there that doing it on your own is how you're supposed to do it. And maybe you show a weakness or something if you ask for help.
Well, I also think it's a time in your life where you're finally getting some self-autonomy, right? When you're an adolescent, you don't really get to do anything on your own. So I think when you hit these years, it definitely feels bad, or it feels, you know, like someone's treating you like a child if they're telling you that they can help you out.
And so how did you what finally made it that you were willing to accept help?
It was after a lot of really difficult times. I don't really want to go into the details about it. But, yeah, it was after a lot of difficult times and really, really dark thoughts and some ill-advised actions that eventually I realized, okay, I really need help. This is really, really, really affecting me and everyone around me, and this is no good.
Right, so... And I very much respect not going into too much detail, but I would tell you again that you share that with a lot of kids. I remember I met a girl once who kept fainting in school, and nobody could find anything physically wrong with her. And she came and I told her, hey, I can help you with some hypnosis, some mind-body regulation. She said, I don't need it right now. And 3 days later, she came back, and I said, why are you back? She said, I fainted again, and I thought about what you said, and I realized I could use some help. So, you know, we have to sometimes hit rock bottom before we do something. You see that in patients with alcoholism. You know, they hit rock bottom,
yeah,
and finally they see they have to do something. So how was it to start therapy? Did it feel natural? It felt you had to push yourself.
It really did feel forced for a while, and I only started therapy around a time after I was enrolled in an intensive outpatient program for ill-advised action. And so it did feel really forced at first, and it still does kind of feel forced, because I'm not one who's really comfortable talking about my feelings and all that jazz. So it definitely is a big change for me, especially because I really don't tell anybody about how I'm feeling at any given moment. So it was difficult, but it's worth it.
And I think it's interesting, you know, that you're not the only one that has trouble talking about his feelings. And I'm wondering if, I don't know if any studies that come to mind, that people who have trouble expressing their feelings are more apt to be depressed. I can tell you this, Kaveh, that people I see with somatic symptoms, so stomach aches, headaches, fainting, those people often have a hard time expressing their feelings, and the feelings come out in their pain or in their body. And perhaps the same is true of depression. It may not be a coincidence.
Well, I used to actually be quite the opposite. I used to be very expressive, very emotional, and I was kind of conditioned by peers and unfortunately by my father over a very long period of time to show no emotion, show no weakness, feel no pain. And so I adopted that and self-internalized that. Yeah.
And that might be some of the nurture we talked about of what predisposes some people to depression, because again, this is experiences and how they deal with them. So, you know, I've known you for a while, and you don't often appear depressed. You seem happy, and you've talked to me about acting depressed. And you also share with me that you think there are three kinds of depressions. Can you talk about that in general, what you've learned?
Well, from my experience interacting with a lot of depressed people, a lot of anxious people, what it really does is it amplifies and kind of contorts your personality. So I've always been kind of a showman in a sense where I love to make people laugh. I love to be kind of the center of attention, and I really like to see people smile. That's my biggest goal. Everything I do is to make people smile. And so I realized when I was depressed, I was really hamming it up, you know? I was really making it seem like I was on top of the world and that I had everything figured out and going for me. And because I didn't want to show people that I could be struggling, because I saw myself as kind of the rock for a lot of people, like, you know, the one person they could rely on to cheer them up. And if I'm a bummer, then, or if I'm bummed out, then, you know, what happens to them, right? So I felt like a lot of people relied on me, so I kept, you know, playing the act. And I think with a lot of people who are, you know, more anxious, it also kind of amplifies their personality. So if someone already has a short temper and they get anxious, then they could become, you know, act out, is what I've noticed. You know, they act out a lot. There was some people in the program that I went to that really did exhibit a contortion of who they described themselves to be before everything really went downhill. And so I've noticed that there's not really three types of depression. Clinically, I guess there is. You know, there's depression, severe depressive disorder, and manic depression, to my awareness. But I think it really it doesn't change someone's personality as much as it twists it into something darker.
And when you were hamming it up, did that make you feel better?
Not in the moment, sometimes, yes, because I love, you know, it's always been this way where I love seeing smiles on people's faces, especially when I know that I'm the one that made them smile. And so it definitely gave me that shot of dopamine in the moment. But then, you know, every night I'd come home and I'd feel like I was a clown, you know, like I was just there for people's entertainment, and that people didn't really want me around. So I kind of deluded myself into believing that if I can only be wanted if I'm, you know, performing. And so it kind of fed into a cycle almost, where it's like I had to perform more, which made me feel, you know, even more like I was only good for performing.
You know, other people take a different strategy, although I guess it's not, you don't plan it out, but other people want to share their misery and make everybody miserable around them so they can commiserate in their misery. And so you took a very different approach. So, Kaveh, thank you very much for sharing some of your journey into depression. When we come back from the break in a moment, I wanted to ask you what parts of the journey of therapy helped you, and were there parts that didn't help you? I'm just curious, from your experience, what kind of things people could look for to help climb out of depression. This is Centerpoint with Dr. Ron Unbar.
Coming attraction, life guide for teens harnessing your inner power to be healthy, happy, and confident. a new book by Dr. Ron Ambar to be published early 2025. Dr. Ambar's renowned counseling practice, Centerpoint Medicine, doesn't fix teens who are struggling. They give them the tools to heal themselves and support them while that healing happens. Life Guide for Teens will share Dr. Ambar's tools for self-empowerment and give teens hundreds of tips to choose from to help themselves heal. The book will be available from Amazon and wherever fine books are sold.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Ambar's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens the way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis at Amazon.com or visit DrAnbar.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Dr. Ron Ambar and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At Centerpoint Medicine, with services in La Jolla, California and Syracuse, New York, this caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at centerpointmedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
Audiobooks gives you instant access to over 50,000 of the bestsellers and hottest book titles in romance, mystery, fiction, and many other genres. Just visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on Audiobooks to get started.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
If you are a medical or licensed healthcare professional or just anyone looking for a qualified hypnosis practitioner, then go on over to ASCH.net. That's the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis. At ASCH.net, you can get certified, attend workshops, and even find a hypnosis practitioner or consultant. ASCH provides an opportunity to learn and interact with colleagues. So whether you're a professional wanting to learn hypnosis or a patient wanting help with a problem, visit ASCH.net now.
More exhilarating talk. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to Centerpoint. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Ambar. Our special guest is Kaveh, who's sharing experiences he's had with depression. And I'm wondering, Kaveh, if you can explain to us what parts of therapy you found helpful, what didn't you find helpful? Please, enlighten.
Yeah, all right. So something that I found really helpful, and I think it's unfortunately more rare than it should be, is that, you know, when talking to my therapist, it really did feel like she cared about what I had to say, you know, how I was feeling. And so that really made me feel, that was like the first step into feeling like maybe I could get better, because it really did seem like she cared about what I was saying more than just, you know, a superficial level of like, oh, I'm so sorry. And so that really helped me out of my shell. And so eventually I started learning cognitive behavioral therapy skills, some of them, and it's been a minute since I've learned their names, but there was a few that have stuck with me. One of them being it was a thermostat for anger. That was one. There was Dear Man, which is a way of communicating healthily and your needs in a more concise way, which I think a lot of people struggle with. So that was really helpful. And there's I wish I remembered the names of these skills, but there was a lot of other ones that I learned that helped me really get control back and manage when things got really rough. And so those were really helpful. Some things that didn't help was I had to see a couple of therapists before I actually met the one that I'm seeing now. And one of them was very he minimized how I felt, right? And I told him like about me, and I really went into detail, but I let him know that, you know, I had friends and I had a girlfriend and I had a brother. And so at the end of the session, he told me, oh, I'm not worried about you. Like, you'll be fine because you have friends and a girlfriend. And that really felt horrible to me because, well, I did disclose to him that, you know, even though I have all these people, I still feel so isolated that it doesn't actually help very much. And so I felt completely disregarded, and that was definitely a very painful experience. Going through some other therapists, I felt, you know, like they were being very disingenuous with me, you know, because, you know, they're at the end of the day, they were paid to listen to me, and it didn't feel like they cared beyond that. And so it definitely took me a while to find the right good therapist for myself, and so the journey there was really the brunt of my negative experiences with therapy.
So you're talking really about the importance of a good patient-therapist relationship. And we should clarify for our audience that while you're a patient of mine as well, but I play a somewhat different role, which maybe we'll get into. But I think one take-home lesson is if you don't get along with your therapist, keep shopping around, because there are different reasons why you may not get along. The therapist might, you know, there might be personality characteristics you don't fit, or the therapist's therapeutic style doesn't fit your needs. So it's really important to be comfortable with your therapist, and I'm glad you finally found one that you are comfortable with. So, I think, do you have any tips? How can you tell it's not working with a therapist? Any from your experience?
Well, it really is just that gut feeling. You really have to trust your gut when it comes to that. If you meet with them 1, 2, 3 times and you feel like they don't care, or that you just don't like them, then don't force yourself to keep coming, because so it is, it's, at the end of the day, it is about you, and so you need to look out for yourself if you're shopping for a therapist. You need to go with your gut, and that's really the only way to know.
Interesting. So tell the story of how we got involved. And what do you remember? How did I come on the scene?
So I remember it must have been 4 or 5 years ago now. I was horrified of needles. That was the reason why I came to you. And I remember I came to talk to you about it, and you used language that I'm sure a lot of other people would find comfort in. Like, I've worked with a bunch of other needle patients before. Like, don't worry, like, it's common. But it made me feel like just another person. And so I actually started off working with you being a little bit combative, if that's the right word. And I tried to give you the benefit of the doubt. And I'm glad I did, because after the first couple of sessions, then I realized, oh, okay, he didn't really mean it that way. I took it personally for no reason. But on the very first session, I definitely had a negative impression.
So again, we're talking about how to develop a relationship between a therapist and patient. And from my end, I don't know who's sitting in front of me. It's interesting, you know, I like you said, some people would have taken well to what I said, and you didn't. But the important part is, I think, for both therapist and patient to be open to each other and communicate with each other so that we have time to adjust. And a good therapist-patient combination will adjust, as we obviously did adjust over time. And then do you remember how you got hooked to do this? How did you finally agree to work with me?
So I've been suffering from back and neck pain for quite a while, and so you taught me a skill on how to manage and kind of reduce that from day to day. And so that's what really got me to keep coming back, because I could, you know, instantly feel a little bit better from my back and neck pain. And so, yeah, that was the first hook.
So when you felt that the back pain felt better, you thought that you could improve the other things I could help you with. So when we come back, I want to actually talk in some detail, if you can share insight in how you developed your fear of needles, because that's actually a very common issue for children, although you may have had your own path, and I'm sure you did, to get there. And I think one thing that we're learning from talking to you today is how every individual is different, and why with a lot of therapists who put people into protocols, and maybe some of the ones you didn't like tried to do that with you, because so here, you know, you have this diagnosis, here's a protocol, and I think it's really important to figure out what each individual brings to the table. So we'll talk more about how anxiety develops, and in your case, anxiety to fear of needles, and then how to help overcome it. This is CenterPoint with Dr. Ron Unbar.
Make-A-Wish has been granting life-changing wishes for children and families for over 40 years. A wish is something that gives children the opportunity to look outside their illness and restore a sense of childhood back to the child. With the help of donors and more than 43,000 worldwide volunteers, Make-A-Wish has collectively granted more than 520,000 wishes worldwide. Dr. Anbar has referred many patients to Make-A-Wish. To make a donation, go to worldwish.org. That's worldwish.org.
HealthyLife.net, the positive radio network.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Ambar's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens the way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis at Amazon.com or visit dranbar.com.
Reach your health and fitness goals. Whether you want to lose weight, learn to dance, build muscle, or just live healthy, Beachbody gives you unlimited access to the nation's most popular fitness and weight loss solutions. Visit our advertiser page and click on Beachbody now.
Dr. Ron Ambar and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At CenterPoint Medicine, with services in La Jolla, California and Syracuse, New York, this caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at centerpointmedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Coming attraction, life guide for teens, harnessing your inner power to be healthy, happy, and confident. A new book by Dr. Ron Ambar to be published early 2025. Dr. Ambar's renowned counseling practice, CenterPoint Medicine, doesn't fix teens who are struggling. They give them the tools to heal themselves and support them while that healing happens. Life Guide for Teens will share Dr. Ambar's tools for self-empowerment and give teens hundreds of tips to choose from to help themselves heal. The book will be available from Amazon and wherever fine books are sold.
All positive talk with a mature edge. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to CenterPoint. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Unbar. Our special guest is Kaveh, who's talked to us about his depression. Now we're talking about his anxiety related to needles. Kaveh, when did that anxiety start, do you know?
It started, I mean, all the way back when I was probably 4, as I'm sure no little kid really likes needles, because they hurt and they're scary. And what really ingrained it into me, the fear that really ingrained it into me, is a lot of repeated more, even more negative experiences with needles. I remember I must have been 5 years old when I was being a little squirmish for getting a needle. So they had a doctor like pin me down with his arms so that I could get the needle. And that really was a scary experience for 5 year old me. And then later on, I was tricked into getting shots a couple of times. Once for a dentist so I could go into anesthesia, and twice for getting shots. And you know, it was very, very slighted. And it was more than just, oh, we're not going to come for a shot. And then I did. It was like they distracted me, and then they stuck it in my arm without, you know, any without me even knowing until, you know, it hurt.
You know, that's such a terrible thing to do, because not only do you feel violated, but, like, you never know when it's going to come, so you never want to go to a doctor again because you could get stuck with a needle and nobody's going to tell you. So what a terrible idea for the medical professional to do that, because it sets up for long-term difficulties. It's what happened to you.
Mm-hmm. So, no, yeah, I developed a fear of my pediatric office. Because of all of those experiences as well.
Of course. In fact, if you didn't develop the fear, somebody'd be wrong with you. But you did develop a really healthy fear, right?
Yeah.
And how did it get when we met? Like, I couldn't even say needle without you writhing in pain. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do. And it wasn't just writhing in pain. I could, you know, feel the pain of the needle on my arm, and it'd be hard for me to breathe. I'd really, really get scared. And I don't know how it developed to that point. I mean, I think part of it is those poor medical incidents. And I think I just got so, so scared over time. You know, every time I went to get one, I'd get even more scared, to the point where it got to there. Just over time, and it kind of compiled. The fear just, you know, kept increasing because there was no other alternative.
You know, as we're talking about it now, because we did not talk about it when I first met you, we didn't talk in any detail because you'd freak out, so I avoided the subject. And then we kind of slipped, I didn't distract you, but I did slip in the therapy for needle phobia later on. But as you're describing how you felt, this is really PTSD. You were traumatized. And I think when saying the word needle reactivated your symptoms, that's what traumatized people do. Did you ever think of it that way?
I never thought about it that way, just because I always, and I still do, I think of trauma as something a little more terrible, you know, like war or you know, domestic abuse. That's really what it's always been in my head that could trigger PTSD. I never thought of it as traumatic as much as just a bad time, partially because, you know, it felt like I was disrespecting, or like calling it that would be disrespect to the people who really, really had to deal with the worst of the worst.
But I think that you're not giving credit or not acknowledging this happened to you when you were five. When you're a little kid, things that would not be traumatic to an adult were, and I think, you know, a little child can't even conceive of domestic abuse or war the way an adult does. So I think that the fact that your symptoms, as you describe it now, were activated just by mentioning the word, that's what PTSD does. And I agree, it's not on the same realm of war. But nonetheless, so if I knew that ahead of time, I guess I would have, we might have used hypnotic techniques that I would use with somebody with past trauma, which would include imagining it from afar, what happened in the past, and learning to turn it off. And do you remember any of this? This was already 5 years ago. Do you remember any specific techniques that helped with the needle phobia?
I don't remember any one specific technique. As I'm sure I sound like a broken record at this point, it was a gradual thing over time. It wasn't really one thing. And I do remember you making me, you know, kind of envision what happened all those years ago, but like from a third party view, I suppose, you know, watching myself get pinned down in a sense. And that was, I feel like that was a turning point into where we started making progress, because I could stomach that at that point. I didn't freak out. And so that was really a signifier of progress to me.
Interesting. And that's therapy I would use for somebody with past trauma. So, and what I taught you is how to stay calm while imagining yourself in the past. If you didn't know how to stay calm with the hypnosis, self-regulation, that could traumatize you again. But by viewing it while calm, it changes the nature of the experience. And indeed, it has helped you, which is great. And I remember the day you went and got a shot, and you were so proud of yourself.
Yeah, I emailed you.
Yep. So that was many years ago. You're still seeing your therapist. Explain why you still benefit from interactions with me, because we see each other pretty regularly still.
Well, I see you as kind of a mentor in a sense. You definitely have some insights that I appreciate, and it's nice being able to, I guess, talk to someone who, you know, does have a few opposing views as me sometimes. It's someone who will be completely honest with me and, you know, outright, you know. So when I'm doing something that, or thinking or doing something that, you know, just isn't a good idea, and you tell me, okay, well, you know, this is not right, or, you know, if I'm struggling with a friendship or a relationship and you give me that insight, like, these people aren't treating you right, or you're not treating this person right, it's really helpful to me, just being able to talk to someone who is very experienced.
So you raise an interesting point that I act as a mentor. We come back, I want to spend a little bit of time talking about the importance of mentorship in this world, and actually the lack of it as our world has become more isolated from each other. We'll talk more about that. This is Centerpoint with Dr. Ron Anbar.
More than 30,000 children and adults of every race and ethnic group in the U.S. have cystic fibrosis. Cystic fibrosis is a disease causing long-lasting lung infections, limiting the ability to breathe over time. Dr. Anbar participated in research that helped advance survival of cystic fibrosis patients by more than 20 years. He encourages you to donate to the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation to help find a cure. It's easy to donate. Go to cff.org. That's cff.org.
HealthyLife.net, the positive radio network.
If you are a medical or licensed healthcare professional, or just anyone looking for a qualified hypnosis practitioner, then go on over to ASCH.net. That's the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis. At ASCH.net, you can get certified, attend workshops, and even find a hypnosis practitioner or consultant. ASCH provides an opportunity to learn and interact with colleagues. So whether you're a professional wanting to learn hypnosis or a patient wanting help with a problem, visit ASCH.net now.
Constant Contact and your small business make a perfect fit for marketing. They give you what you need to succeed. Fast and easy email marketing at your fingertips. Visit the HealthyLife.net advertiser page and click on Constant Contact to start your marketing.
Healing and changing children's lives with hypnosis is very real and very possible. Dr. Ron Anbar's new book, Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis, provides you meaningful stories and expert explanations to show you not only the process of hypnosis, but its many benefits for overall wellness. Whether a parent, practitioner, or medical doctor, this book opens the way to complete connection, so necessary for healing. Get your copy of Changing Children's Lives with Hypnosis at Amazon.com or visit dranbar.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Dr. Ron Ambar and his dedicated team of healthcare providers offer unique health services to help patients overcome psychological roadblocks or use the power of their minds to improve their overall health and well-being. At Centerpoint Medicine, with services in La Jolla, California and Syracuse, New York, this caring staff are waiting just to help you. Find out more at centerpointmedicine.com. Can't wait? Make your appointment now. Call 858-201-4001. That's 858-201-4001.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to Center Point. I'm your host, Dr. Ron Ambar. Special guest is Kaveh. We've talked about depression, anxiety. Now we're talking about mentorship and my role as a mentor for Kaveh. I think it's, at this point we have a really cool experience as you're spending 5 weeks as part of your high school experience in my office, which is a great privilege for both of us, I think. But let's talk about mentors. There aren't many in the society. I counsel my patients that when they get off to college to make sure they find a mentor, because it makes the college experience so much better. And I've often thought that in our modern society, kids don't have options for mentors as we did in the old days when neighbors were talking to one another more and there were extended family members. So in the old days, somebody could go talk to their grandfather or their uncle or their neighbor to get advice. But in today's society, it seems like we're more isolated. Have you noticed the same thing, Kaveh?
Yes and no. I definitely have noticed that there's a lot less people who are even seeking mentorship just because everyone is so self-assured, or at least wants to be self-assured. And so no one, I think now more than ever, people are really afraid of asking for help or asking to learn. And part of that is because also people are afraid of a stranger or their neighbor or their grandfather saying, no, I don't want to teach you or I don't want to mentor you, because it's not a good feeling. And I think a lot of people are avoidant of that. And so they just don't put themselves out there.
You've heard of experiences where people have sought mentorship and they've been rejected?
Absolutely not. I'm saying that this is a common fear in people's heads, right? Everyone's afraid of rejection, or at least I'd say the majority of people are afraid of rejection, and so people would rather not take the shot than take the shot and be shot down.
Interesting. So, well, this might actually be reflecting the anxiety. Clearly, anxiety has increased among young people since 20 years ago. There are many reasons for that. I think a large part of that is the smartphones and the access to the internet and people staying up late at night and not sleeping. So there's reasons for the increased anxiety. And what you're suggesting is people are more afraid to ask for help, maybe because of that anxiety, which is interesting because I see people for anxiety and sometimes they're too anxious to even talk to me because it makes them anxious. And perhaps you're describing an extension of that. So what do you think? How do we get past that? How do we help our friends, our society, to get the help?
Well, I think it's just forcing yourself to put yourself out there. Because once you've gotten yeses and nos enough amount of times, you realize that it really isn't so bad when someone says no. Most people aren't going to be mean about it. Most people are just going to, you're like, no, I can't do this right now. I'm sorry, I'm busy, or something like that. No, most people are not mean spirited enough to cruelly be like, no, I hate you, right? And so I think what a lot of people are afraid of is catastrophizing. And if you go out there, you put yourself out there, then I found in a lot of my peers is that when you do put yourself out there, you find that it's a lot less scary than what you've psyched yourself up to think it is.
And that's also common with anxiety, right? Anxiety makes you fear things that aren't real. It feels real, but they're not. And so you're absolutely right. I think most people who are involved, let's say, with teenagers, welcome somebody who comes to them and says, hey, can you help me out here? Because they care, they want to help. That would be a teachers or counselors or even physicians. And I think that parents, I mean, people don't go to their parents as often as they might because they're supposed to grow independent from them. But, you know, your neighbor might be open to it as well, depending on their relationship. There are opportunities for mentorship, but perhaps for the reasons we've discussed, that people don't avail themselves. You know, it's an interesting society we've evolved into.
Yeah, and I think we've kind of evolved into this partially because, and this is might sound a little bit odd, but we've really normalized. We almost promoted being anxious about things. And I think that's, you know, partially why everyone feels so comfortable in anxiety is because it's something that is almost, you know, expected from people nowadays. So I think it's okay to be anxious, but we've really glorified it in a sense. And I think that's partially why it's gotten so common.
Could you say a little bit more about how we've glorified anxiety, how we've made it more acceptable?
Well, partially it's because we're very, very, very accommodating completely out there fears in a sense, right? And again, as I'm saying, you know, it's okay to be anxious. Anxiety is okay, but we've gotten to the point where you can tell someone you're anxious and then, you know, everything will just go your way, right? It's gotten to a point where you don't even need to be anxious to tell someone you're anxious and then you can get benefits. And so I think in the sense we're rewarding that behavior and we're not trying to help. No one's really, you have to seek out help for anxiety. So it's super easy to just get exposed to it and become comfortable with it, but it's a lot more difficult to find your way out of it.
Social media is promoting this as well?
Absolutely.
Interesting. Well, Kavi, you've taught me again. One of the reasons I love interacting with you is because you teach me. And this is really interesting, the idea that anxiety has been promoted as a tool now and therefore becomes less something you try to overcome than maybe glorify. And that's a really interesting take. Did you think of that yourself? Did you hear this somewhere? This is a really interesting thought.
Yeah, this is kind of something that I've thought to myself for a little while now, just because, you know, you can go anywhere and you know, tell a story even if it's completely false and farm a bunch of, you know, instant gratification, a lot of, like, likes and sympathy, and, you know, people like that positive reinforcement, so then more people try to harp onto that, and it really does create this kind of cycle of, you know, just needing that attention, and so people will fabricate or lean into their ailments.
So this is throwing down a gauntlet, I think, to society to see if we can rethink this as somebody interested in mental health, and you're interested in helping people feel better and feel good. We need to figure out maybe an antidote to this kind of thinking, which is, of course, a large...
Yeah, it's... We're a lot less focused on helping people overcome anxiety as we are just accommodating it, and I think that's kind of where we're going wrong.
Well, I think that would be a great project to take on and maybe a subject for a future blog, Kaveh. Thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate it, you sharing your experiences and your wisdom with us.
Yeah, of course.
This is Centerpoint with Dr. Ron Unbar.
Heads up, there's a sound and light chamber therapy offered in La Jolla, California at the Center for Holistic Well-Being. Using light and sound frequency produces an energetic vibration that can help restore our body's cellular, biochemical, and neurological balance as well as help detoxification without harmful side effects. For more info, visit centerforholisticwellbeing.com. Better yet, schedule an appointment. Call 858-215-5489. That's 858-215-5489.
HealthyLife.net, the positive radio network.
Coming attraction, life guide for teens harnessing your inner power to be healthy, happy, and confident. A new book by Dr. Ron Unbar to be published early 2025. Dr. Ambar's renowned counseling practice, Centerpoint Medicine, doesn't fix teens who are struggling. They give them the tools to heal themselves and support them while that healing happens. Life Guide for Teens will share Dr. Ambar's tools for self-empowerment and give teens hundreds of tips to choose from to help themselves heal. The book will be available from Amazon and wherever fine books are sold.
Get high-quality glasses, sunglasses, and prescription lenses at eyeglasses.com. Choose from over 250,000 items and 400 brands. Already have frames? Get replacement lenses. It's easy. Go to our advertiser page and click eyeglasses.com.
If you are a medical or licensed healthcare professional or just anyone looking for a qualified hypnosis practitioner, then go on over to ASCH.net. That's the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis. At ASCH.net, you can get certified, attend workshops, and even find a hypnosis practitioner or consultant. ASCH provides an opportunity to learn and interact with colleagues. So whether you're a professional wanting to learn hypnosis or a patient wanting help with a problem, visit ASCH.net now.
Uplifting talk. HealthyLife.net.